So I just wanted to share a few thoughts about this, about how we can easily lose our way and ways we can find our way back. But I want us to start in talking about us going to a circus. Who's been to a circus here? All right.
I worked in one.
You worked in one?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Oh, I'm not allowed to say it because my girlfriend's scared of them.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. But circuses are amazing. Like, I remember going to one when I was a very young boy, and, you know, it is an amazing assault on the senses, right? You know, it is kind of equal parts
danger and thrill.
Popcorn, hay, animal urine. You know, it's all mixed into this kind of heady mixture that kind of sets you up, and you see, and your heart and your mind is expecting to see an amazing performance. And I wasn't disappointed. You know, there was animals. This is before animal days, obviously. You could still have animals in cages and all sorts of archaic things. And then at the end, these motorcycles went into a metal circle, and then they just spun around, and I was blown away. My mind was blown. It was a performance, right. So quite naturally I was expecting quite an amazing thing to happen, and it did, and the performers were expecting to put on a performance. And that's an okay way to approach a circus, but it's not an okay way to approach life. And we've been following Jesus through the book of Matthew, and we see that the last couple of chapters there's been a lot of bread and circuses going on, the feeding of crowds and a lot of healing, and there is a high level of expectation. There is a high level of anticipation. The crowds are excited. They want more. A bit like a performance. It's a bit like they are attending a circus where there's free food. And it's setting them up. And look, the crowd were pretty pumped a bit earlier when this guy called John the Baptist was around, but they quickly got rid of him. But that's all right, because crowds aren't exactly known for their ability to hold a collective memory, are they? They quickly move on to the next king, to the next hero. And so they've forgotten about John, they want Jesus, and all of a sudden they want a new king. They want someone to be at the center of it all. And that's a bit of a dangerous position to be in. Not only as a dangerous position for the crowd, but also a dangerous position for those who they want to make king. It's something that is a regular occurrence, though, because crowds want people to be able to celebrate, to have people they want to be able to put up in lights. Very, very dangerous. Success has led to this position. There's been healing, there's been food, but there's a problem there, because success, apart from the very fact that it has very little to teach you in the spiritual life after about the age of 30, is success repositions you. Last week we heard about how the little contributions of a couple of pieces of bread and a couple of pieces of fish all of a sudden multiplied and fed a crowd, right? But all of a sudden, when you have success, you can begin to make the subtle but huge shift to say that, instead of saying that something happened through me, to something happened because of me. There's a big difference. There's a big shift there. Can you feel it? You know, all of a sudden, you can reposition yourself internally to say that something, I can make things happen. It sets others' expectations up, but no more so than your own expectations. We can make these small contributions and they can lead to amazing things. But then all of a sudden we're expecting it to happen like a magic formula. And we can quickly lose our mission, because success all of a sudden brings more and more opportunities. And I'm sure the crowd was looking for more and more free food and free healings. And I'm sure the disciples were looking for more and more free things too. You know, we often saw this in Mount Druitt when we were there, and also in Springvale before that. I'm a social worker. Right, so usually I say the 10 scariest words in the English language are, I'm a social worker and I'm here to help, right? Very dangerous words. I've replaced that. There's a scarier sentence, which is, John, can I have a coffee with you? God said something to me. And, oh my goodness. And it was always the same. About once every few months, someone would get in touch and say, John, can we have a coffee? God said something to me. I said, oh, what was it? And it's amazing how utterly bland and consistent God seemed to be, which was, God's told me to go and start giving out food for free to everyone in the area. And I'd sigh a deep sigh, and often it was, I'd always ask the question, has God also told you that there's about 48 other groups doing exactly the same thing in the same area? But that hadn't ever dawned on anyone. Apparently when God speaks, it's utterly unique, and never joining with anyone else. It's always about you doing something amazing. And so slowly, you would see this pattern emerge, and all of a sudden a new hero would arrive in town. If you could go to somewhere and get free food, the next hero would walk in and actually home deliver free food to your house. And then all of a sudden people would stop turning up at community events, and you say, where are you? And you're following them up, and they would say, oh, I'm at this new person's place. And you would see this slow process where this new person would become king, and I would always get in touch with that new person and say, do you know what? I can probably map out your road to burnout, right? And if you make it longer than 18 months, you're a champion, but I can almost guarantee it. And sure enough, 18 months later, you would see this person saying, I've got to get out of this neighborhood. I can no longer do it. It was a pretty predictable and predictable road to ruin, actually. Because all of a sudden, when that success began to happen, when you got the ego kick, all of a sudden, that person became central. That person had to make things happen. That person had to make even more and better things happen. And they'd internalize that. And then all of a sudden, they'd put on this cloak of saying, this is who I am. That cloak of some sort of identity. When I say that cloak, I mean the stories that we tell to ourselves about ourselves to make us feel okay about ourselves. Do you get that? We all do it. So for some of us, it's I'm a helper. For others, it's I'm compassionate. For others, it's I'm funny. For others, it's I'm hopeless. For others, it's I'm worthless. And all of a sudden, we put that cloak on, and that's how we interact with the world. And we suddenly, every interaction we have is objectifies everyone involved, objectifies ourselves, objectifies people who we interact with, because we're not really encountering one another as human beings to be met, but rather as two objects kind of hitting each other. We need a bit more subjectification, actually. So often you'll hear people say, I give out things and I gain far more than I receive. And if you're in that mindset, you're absolutely correct. Because what you needed to receive was the kick you get from giving, with virtually no thought of the impact it has upon whoever you're interacting with. That's our identity. That's our cloak. That's where they wanted Jesus in this story. They wanted Jesus to be king, but Jesus' heart was still heavy from losing John the Baptist, but the crowd had forgotten about him. So how does Jesus respond? Well, he sends everyone away. He sends the crowds away. There's a book called The Wisdom of Crowds. I don't trust it at all, right? There's very little wisdom in the group. There's power in community, but there's very little wisdom in the group think. And so Jesus sends them away, sends the disciples away, and he goes up a mountain. You ran up Heartbreak Hill this morning, didn't you, Dita?
Yep.
That does a job on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to run down the other side.
Yeah. Going up a mountain, what does that do? Going up a mountain, if you've ever gone up, as you get higher and higher, your lungs are filled with warmer and warmer air, and then as the higher and higher you get, the colder and colder the air gets too. So you have this cold air contracting your lungs while you have this warm air expanding your lungs, and it's quite a collision. And all of a sudden, it doesn't take very long, unless you're Dita, who can run up all day long, up and down these hills, for you to be pretty utterly exhausted in this kind of new, rarefied air. And all of a sudden, it is a great physical way of realizing how small we really are in the great scheme of things. Right? That we're not the center of things. And it helps reposition us from the mistake of making ourselves central, we're going to make these things happen, to putting us back to where we are, which is saying God can work through us in a way we don't know. As we offer our small loaves and our small bits of fish, we can see that God can do amazing, amazing things. As Wayside, we're challenged now. We've been offering our little bits of bread and our little bits of fish, and now the government have come along to us and said, hey, can you stay open longer till 11? We'll help pay for it. And then that success is breeding more success. But then it's very tempting for us to be able to say yes to everything and lose our sense of mission. Jesus gets away up to a mountain, and that he makes that move from loneliness to solitude. Do you understand what that difference is? Got it? From loneliness to solitude. Because let's face it, we're in a crowd, most of us are lonely. And that's a dangerous place to be. If we want to be a part of community, we need to be comfortable with solitude. To open ourselves up spiritually. To reposition ourselves, to refocus, reclean, to get us refocused on what our mission is in life. And when I say that is, everyone here has something from God. You all have a purpose. You all have a mission. You all have a why. It's very easy for us to lose that sense of purpose. But we must hold it strong. And we refocus it. Otherwise, we need to have action and reflection. Action by itself makes us a bit mercenary, right? Just contemplation, just reflection makes us a bit useless. We can become experts in the kind of lint that's in our belly buttons and doesn't really get you anywhere in the world. You might get a job working at some churches if you're good at it, but don't say that I said that out loud. But we need to combine the first. We can't be mercenary. We can't be motionless. We need to be refocused on our mission. What is our mission? Sometimes we have to be in the boat, and sometimes we have to be out of the boat. And we need to know the difference about when to be in the boat and when to be out on the waves. Because if we're positioned incorrectly, we step out onto the boat and we're in a mercenary type of mode, we think we have to take every battle on. But as Jesus shows us, you can walk on top of that water. You can walk upon the waves of life. But Peter is a sinker, right? We see Peter sinking. That's okay, I'm a sinker too. Right? Anyone here a sinker? All right, we're all sinkers, which is great. But the thing you need to remember is Jesus doesn't give up on Peter. Jesus doesn't give up on you. Peter calls out, he grabs his hand. There's always a spot for you at the table. You know, my one of my earliest memories was when going to a friend's house, and it was just getting near dinner, and I was about 6 years old, and then about 8 or 9 years old, and the friend's mum said, John, you can't stay for dinner because I didn't pull out enough food. I don't know what that means, but then I saw that she was boiling everything. So it was three green beans were being boiled, a piece of silver side was being boiled, and something else was being boiled. So first of all, I wasn't that upset, right? Because I know mum made some nice curries at home. But the second thing I felt was, gee, that there wasn't a spot at that table for me. That feeling of exclusion. Whereas mum, and I pay out my mum all the time when I'm sharing, but my mum always had more than enough food on the pot ready to go. And it was always available for anyone and everyone. Well, I always had trouble being able to work out the difference between God and my mother at times. But God's like that. There's a place for you at the table. If you're willing to take off that cloak of identity that you've put on, if you're willing to say, hey, I think I am drowning a bit, Jesus will reach out his hand to pull us back in. There's a pot bubbling over with your favourite food in here. The bread of life is here. There's a spot for you at this table. All it takes for you is to stand up and to move your feet towards it.